TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Michael Parenti Commentaries. Government by Giveaway and Good Things Are Happening in Venezuela. In the fall of 2005, Michael Parenti began writing a series of commentaries addressing the urgent issues of our time. Parenti is one of this country's leading progressive political thinkers and an award-winning author. In part one of this program, you heard his analysis of How the Free Market Killed New Orleans and an indictment of the Supreme Court's right-wing judicial activism. In this program, you will hear Parenti's report about his visit to Venezuela and his direct observations of Hugo Chavez. Parenti returned from Venezuela with an inspiring and long list of good things that are happening there, from education, healthcare, indigenous rights, worker and farming cooperatives, and resistance to neoliberal plans for privatization of the oil industry. However, first you will hear Parenti's commentary on Government by Giveaway, written in December 2005. In response to the cuts by the Bush administration of $42 billion from the human services budget, Parenti assembled a long list of government handouts to corporate America, including tax cuts for corporations and the super-rich, hidden and not-so-hidden subsidies to transnational corporations, allowing big business to exploit the nation's oil, coal, and mineral reserves on public land for a pittance, tariff protections and trade supports, loopholes for agribusiness, and much more. In the end, it becomes obvious that compared to corporate America, ordinary working Americans get the least support while carrying the heaviest financial burden. Here is Michael Parenti with Government by Giveaway.
In December 2005, the reactionaries who are running the government and ruining the country decided to cut about $42 billion from the human services budget over the next few years. Most of the cuts will come out of the hides of the very poorest among us. The victims include persons afflicted with disabling diseases who already have trouble trying to live on a monthly federal pittance. But there's another side to this Scrooge story. There are others among us who are treated most handsomely by Washington. I'm referring, of course, to corporate America. A central function of the corporate capitalist state is to maintain and advance the capital accumulation process. This it does by first taxing the many to subsidize the few, and second, by privatizing the public wealth, specifically the land, airwaves, mineral deposits, and other natural resources that are nominally the property of the American people. In the 1950s, the Eisenhower administration sought to undo what conservatives in those days called creeping socialism of the New Deal. So they handed out to private corporations some $50 billion, or $200 billion in today's dollars, $50 billion worth of offshore oil reserves, government-owned synthetic rubber factories, public lands, public utilities, and atomic installations. During that time, the federal government also built a multi-billion dollar interstate highway system that provided the infrastructure and an enormous indirect subsidy for the trucking and automotive industries. The practice of using the public's money and resources to subsidize private enterprise continues to this day. It's variously estimated that every year the federal government doles out hundreds of billions of dollars in corporate welfare in the form of tax exclusions, reduced tax assessments, generous depreciation write-offs and tax credits, price supports, loan guarantees, payments in kind, subsidized insurance rates, marketing services, export subsidies, irrigation and reclamation programs, and research and development grants. the government leases or sells at a mere fraction of market value billions of dollars worth of oil, coal, and mineral reserves. It fails to collect hundreds of millions of dollars in royalties, interest, and penalties, and it sometimes gives the companies the right to purchase the land title for a nominal fee. The government pays out huge sums in unnecessarily high interest rates on the billions it has borrowed from private creditors, what we call the national debt. It permits billions in public funds to remain on deposit in private banks without collecting interest itself. It lends out billions at below market interest rates. It tolerates overcharging by firms with whom it does business and provides long-term credits and traffic protections to large companies. It pays out billions to reimburse big corporate defense contractors for the costs of their mergers. The government gave away the entire broadcasting spectrum valued at $37 billion in 1989 dollars, instead of leasing or auctioning it off, thereby giving the big rich networks nearly five times the broadcasting space they previously controlled. Every year, the federal government loses tens of millions of dollars charging ranchers, so-called ranchers, below-cost grazing rates on over 20 million acres of public lands. These ranchers, including a number of billionaires, big oil companies, and insurance companies. Over the past five decades, at least $100 billion in public subsidies have gone to the nuclear industry, or nuclear industry, and many billions worth of federally funded research and development has passed straight into corporate hands without the government collecting a penny in royalties. The U.S. Foreign Service has built almost 400,000 miles of access roads through national forests, many times the size of the federal interstate highway system. Used for the logging operations of timber companies, these roads contribute to massive mudslides that contaminate water supplies, ruin spawning streams, and kill people. Shall I go on, in case you're not depressed enough? The U.S. Agency for International Development, AID, as it's known, spent over $1 billion in taxpayers' money over the last decade to help companies move U.S. jobs to cheaper labor markets abroad. AID provided low-interest loans, tax exemptions, travel and training funds, and advertising to the corporate outsourcers. AID also furnished blacklists to help companies weed out union sympathizers from their workforces in various countries. In any one year, many billions in subsidies go to agribusiness producers of feed grain, wheat, cotton, rice, soy, dairy, wool, tobacco, peanuts, and wine, with relatively little going to small agrarian producers. Subsidies to big commercial farms encourage wasteful water practices and increase toxic runoffs into rivers and bays from pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers. The Government Accountability Office estimates that agribusiness uses legal loopholes to circumvent subsidy limits, thereby collecting more than $2 billion in unjustified payments every year. The federal government subsidizes the railroad, shipping, and airline industries, along with the exporters of iron, steel, textiles, tobacco, paper, and other products. It doles out huge amounts in grants and tax incentives to the big petroleum companies to encourage oil exploration. In the 1970s, several major petroleum companies leased acreage in Alaska for oil exploration, paying $900 million for public lands that yielded $50 billion in oil reserves. Numerous medications marketed by the pharmaceutical industry have been paid for in whole or part by taxpayers, who sometimes then cannot afford the high prices charged for these medications. Whole new technologies are developed at public expense. Nuclear energy, electronics, aeronautics, space communications, mineral exploration, computer systems, the internet, biomedical genetics, and others, only then to be handed over to industry for private gain. Thus, AT&T managed to have the entire satellite communication system put under its control in 1962. This is after U.S. taxpayers put up the initial $20 billion to develop it. The costs are left to socialism, the profits go to capitalism. Under corporate capitalism, the ordinary citizen pays twice for most things. First, as a taxpayer who provides the subsidies and supports, then as a consumer who buys the high-priced commodities and services. Overall, federal spending represents an enormous upward redistribution of income. So while the corporate free marketeers preach self-reliance to us and insist that we not go running to the government for handouts, they have their hands out all the time. They shamelessly gorge themselves at the public trough, like the overweening, greed-ridden hypocrites that they are.
That was Michael Parenti reading his commentary, Government by Giveaway. Next, Parenti turns to Venezuela. He recently visited there and attended events with Hugo Chavez. Parenti wrote upon his return, "Good things are happening in Venezuela."
Even before I arrived in Venezuela for a recent visit, I encountered the great class divide that besets that country. On my connecting flight from Miami to Caracas, I found myself seated next to an attractive, exquisitely dressed Venezuelan woman. Judging from her prosperous aspect, I anticipated that she would take the first opportunity to hold forth against President Hugo Chavez. Unfortunately, I was right. Our conversation moved along famously until we got to the political struggle that's going on in Venezuela. "Chavez," she said. She hissed it. "Chavez is terrible. He's terrible. He's a liar. He fools the people. He's ruining the country." She herself owns an upscale women's fashion company with links to prominent firms in the United States. When I asked how Chavez has hurt her business, she said, "Not at all." "But many other businesses," she quickly added, "have been irreparably damaged, as has the whole economy." She went on denouncing Chavez in sweeping terms, warning me of the national disaster to come if this demon continued to have his way. Other critics I encountered in Venezuela shared this same mode of attack, weak on specifics but strong on venom, voiced with all the ferocity of those who fear that their birthright, that is their class advantage, was under siege because others below them on the social ladder were now getting a slightly larger slice of the pie. In Venezuela, over 80% of the population lives below the poverty level. Before Chavez, most of the poor had never seen a doctor or a dentist. The neoliberal market adjustments of the 1980s and 90s only made things worse, cutting social spending and eliminating subsidies in consumer goods. Successive administrations did nothing about the rampant corruption and nothing about the growing gap between rich and poor, the worsening malnutrition and desperation. Far from ruining the country, here are some of the good things the Chavez government has accomplished. A land reform program designed to assist small farmers and the landless poor has been instituted. In March 2005, a large landed estate owned by a British beef company was occupied by agrarian workers for farming purposes. Even before Chavez, there was public education in Venezuela from grade level to university. Yet many children from poor families never attended school, for they couldn't afford the annual fees. Education is now completely free, right through to university level, causing a dramatic increase in school enrollment. Another factor is the children get to eat lunch at school, which is a good thing for them. The government has set up a marine conservation program and is taking steps to protect the land and fishing rights of indigenous peoples. Special banks now assist small enterprises, worker cooperatives, and farmers. Attempts to further privatize the state-run oil industry, 80% of which is still publicly owned, have been halted, and limits have been placed on foreign capital penetration. Another thing, Chavez kicked out the U.S. military advisors and prohibited overflights by U.S. military aircraft engaged in counterinsurgency in Colombia. Bolivarian circles have been organized through the nation, neighborhood committees designed to activate citizens at the community level to assist in literacy, education, vaccination campaigns, and other public services. The government hires unemployed men on a temporary basis to repair streets and neglected drainage and water systems in poor neighborhoods. Then there's the health program. I visited a dental clinic in Chavez's home state of Barinas. The staff consisted of four dentists, two of whom were young Venezuelan women. The other two were Cuban men who were there on a one-year program. The Venezuelan dentists noted that in earlier times, dentists didn't have enough work. There were millions of people who needed treatment, but care was severely rationed by that most severe of all rationers, rationed by the private market, that is, by one's ability to pay. Dental care was distributed like any other commodity, not to everyone who needed it, but only to those who could afford it. When the free clinic in Barinas first opened, it was flooded with people seeking dental care. No one was turned away. Even opponents of the Chavez government availed themselves of the new free service, temporarily putting aside their political aversions and distaste. Many of the doctors and dentists who work in the barrio clinics, along with some of the clinical supplies and pharmaceuticals, many of them and the supplies come from Cuba. Chavez has also put Venezuelan military doctors and dentists to work in the free clinics. Meanwhile, much of the Venezuelan medical establishment is vehemently opposed to the free clinic program, seeing it as a Cuban communist campaign to undermine medical standards and physicians' earnings. That low-income people are receiving medical and dental care for the first time in their lives does not seem to be a consideration that carries much weight among the more professionally minded doctors. I visited one of the government-sponsored community food stores that are located around the country, mostly in low-income areas. These modest establishments sell canned goods, pasta, beans, rice, and some produce and fruits at well below the market price, a blessing in a society with widespread malnutrition. Popular food markets have eliminated the layers of middlemen and made staples more affordable for residents. Most of these markets are run by women. The government also created a state finance bank whose function is to provide low-income women with funds to start cooperatives in their communities. There's a growing number of worker cooperatives. One in Caracas has started by turning a waste dump into a shoe factory and a t-shirt factory. Financed with money from the Petroleum Ministry, the co-op has put about 1,000 people to work. The workers seem enthusiastic and hopeful. Surprisingly, many Venezuelans know relatively little about the worker cooperatives. Or perhaps it's not surprising, given the near monopoly that private capital has over the print and broadcast media. The wealthy media moguls, all vehemently anti-Chavez, own four of the five television stations and all the major newspapers. Yet Chavez is represented in America as a dictator who controls information. In fact, the information system is, as it is in our country, privatized and in the hands of wealthy oligarchs. The man most responsible for Venezuela's revolutionary developments, Hugo Chavez, has been accorded the usual ad hominem treatment in the U.S. news media. An article in the San Francisco Chronicle described him as Venezuela's pugnacious president. An earlier Chronicle report quotes a political opponent who calls Chavez a psychopath, a terribly aggressive guy. The London Financial Times sees him as increasingly autocratic and presiding over what the Times called a rogue democracy. A rogue democracy. ABC's Nightline labels him the leftist strongman who delivered a tirade in the United Nations against President Bush. In the liberal magazine The Nation, Mark Cooper, one of those Cold War liberals who nowadays regularly defends the U.S. empire, writes that the democratically elected Chavez speaks, quote, often as a thug who flirts with megalomania. Chavez's behavior, Cooper rattles on, quote, borders on the paranoiac, is ham-fisted demagogy, acted out with an increasingly autocratic style, unquote. Like so many critics, Cooper downplays Chavez's accomplishments and uses name-calling in place of informed analysis. Other media mouthpieces is a good term for them, but I meant other media mouthpieces have labeled Chavez, I'll quote, mercurial, besieged, heavy-handed, incompetent, dictatorial, a barracks populist, a firebrand, and above all, a leftist. It's never explained what leftist means. A leftist is someone who advocates a more equitable distribution of social resources and human services. A leftist is someone who creates that clinic that I visited, who supports the kind of programs that the Chavez government is putting in place. Likewise, a rightist is someone who opposes such programs and seeks to advance the insatiable privileges of private capital and the wealthy few. So what's wrong if he's a leftist? Why don't you stop and explain what you mean when you label and besmirch someone as leftist? The term leftist is frequently bandied about in the U.S. media, but it's seldom defined. The power of the label is in its remaining undefined, allowing it to have an abstracted, built-in, demonizing impact which precludes rational examination of its political content. Meanwhile, Chavez's opponents, who staged an illegal and unconstitutional coup in April 2002 against Venezuela's democratically elected government, are depicted in the U.S. media as champions of pro-democratic and pro-West governance. We're talking about the free market plutocrats and corporate military leaders of the privileged social order who killed more people in the 48 hours they held power in 2002 than were ever harmed by Chavez in all his years of rule. When one of these perpetrators, General Carlos Alfonso, was hit with charges for the role he had played in the undemocratic and treasonous coup, the New York Times chose to call him a dissident whose rights were being suppressed by the Chavez government, his right to go and destroy the government. Four other top military officers charged with leading the 2002 coup were also likely to face legal action. No doubt they too will be described not as plotters or traitors who tried to destroy a democratic government, but as dissidents, simple, decent individuals who are being denied their right to murder people they disagree with. I mean, their right to disagree with the government. President Hugo Chavez, that was an intentional mistake. President Hugo Chavez, whose public talks I attended on three occasions, proved to be an educated, articulated, remarkably well-informed and well-read individual. Of big heart, deep human feeling, and keen intellect, he manifests a sincere dedication to effecting some salutary changes for the great mass of his people. A man who, in every aspect, seems worthy of the decent and peaceful democratic revolution he is leading. Millions of his compatriots correctly perceive him as being the only president who has ever paid attention to the nation's poorest areas. No wonder he's the target of calumny and coup from the upper echelons in his own country and from ruling circles up north. Chavez charges that the United States government is plotting to assassinate him. I can believe it.
That was Michael Parenti reading his commentary, Good Things Are Happening in Venezuela. Michael Parenti is one of the nation's leading progressive political analysts and a highly respected author. He has taught at colleges and universities in the United States and abroad. He is the author of 19 books, among them The Assassination of Julius Caesar, The Culture Struggle, and Super Patriotism. This was the second half of a one-hour program of commentaries on the urgent issues of our time. A copy of this program includes Parenti's commentaries on How the Free Market Killed New Orleans and Right-Wing Judicial Activism. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org for links with Michael Parenti's site. Please find a pen to write down a phone number for information on how to order an audio tape or CD of this talk. This talk is also available as film on DVD. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your order of a copy of this program is our only support and essential in keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD or DVD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. Time of Useful Consciousness is an aeronautical term. The time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for the pilot to save the plane. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.